You are listening to the Financial Clarity for Doctors podcast by Finity Group, LLC, where we discuss the pertinent financial planning topics facing physicians and other medical professionals. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research, Inc., a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. And now, here are your hosts, Rochelle VanderZanden and Corey Janoff.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to Financial Clarity for Doctors. I'm Corey Janoff, joined, as always, by Rochelle VanderZanden.
Hello.
And you've probably heard us say before, personal finances are a lot more personal than finance. You know, people's goals and objectives differ, their stage of life differs, incomes, etc., appetite for certain strategies or investments varies. But today, Rochelle and I want to talk about kind of how we ourselves approach things such as debt, retirement savings, college savings, etc., in our personal lives, you know, to give you an idea of what, you know, we might be doing, so, and see how it you know, is similar or maybe different than how you might approach things. How do the financial professionals handle their finances? Yeah, we're going to talk more high level strategy, theory, thoughts, not get into like specific numbers, because anytime you talk about a specific number, people get hung up on the number and, you know, they miss the forest for the trees. So, but yeah, we're going to kind of go through all the main things that people focus on in their personal finances, from retirement savings to budgeting to college planning, insurances, taxes, et cetera. So,
I kind of love this because I feel like a lot of times you're not allowed to talk about money in your personal life. It's just like, you know, I think people do a little bit more than they used to, but still not very much. And I'm like, I like to geek out on this stuff. I want to tell people what I do. But
I know, right? I am totally comfortable talking finances with people, but I recognize that other people may not be that comfortable, or it might make them uncomfortable. So, you know, I'll go into it if it seems like people are wanting to or bringing it up, but I'm not going to push the subject on people.
Yeah. Corey, tell us first what your kind of like overarching objectives are. Like what's the big picture?
Yeah. So I think, you know, you read the internet and you'll get lots of recommendations on how you should, you know, develop a financial plan or strategy. I think, a lot of folks will say, oh, you must have a written financial plan, you must have everything mapped out, etc. I don't know if I buy into that 100%. I'm all for having a written financial plan if it helps you. At the same time, I don't think it's imperative to have a like written document that details your financial strategy and plan, but having more of a maybe concrete set of objectives or, you know, what's the purpose in your life? Like, what do you want money to ultimately do for you? And for me, financially speaking, like I value autonomy and control over my time more than anything. I want to be able to do what I want to do, when I want to do it, with whom I want to do it, and not have to answer to anybody. With a wife and kids, it doesn't always work out that way. But, you know, I kind of intentionally got into this profession, you know, entering college, I knew I wanted to go into a career or I didn't have a boss. I essentially was working for myself, you know, was willing to work 12 hours a day for me rather than 8 hours a day for someone else. And, you know, be able to control my schedule. So, you know, I can do that, which is great. Like I can go skiing on a Wednesday afternoon with the kids because they get out of school early on Wednesdays because Oregon has limited school days and hours. You know, I can take off on a Friday and go play golf if I want to. You know, I got to plan a little in advance, but it's nice being able to do that. So, you know, trying orchestrating, you know, making sure we're saving a healthy amount so that I can afford to do those things. You know, if we were living paycheck to paycheck, I probably couldn't afford to go play a round of golf, or go skiing. You know, those are kind of expensive hobbies. But yeah, I'd rather, you know, go do something fun and do something that I want to do than kind of grind away at that, you know, household chores, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with all of that. Like just having control over your time and your schedule is so important. And to be able to do that while working is great. And obviously, there are times when Corey and I work more than we want to, period. But but just knowing that you have some flexibility with your schedule, like even at this point, and trying to work towards, you know, increased financial freedom over time by saving is huge. I think the other thing that I focus on probably more than a lot of people is spending. And I think for me, it's partially like a value-based thing. Like, I don't want to spend money on stuff we don't need, and therefore, like, continue to spend money on stuff we don't need and make myself work more than I necessarily need to just because the world says, like, we need all of this stuff, because we don't. And I hate that we, you know, put ourselves in these boxes where we have these big houses and big mortgage payments, and we have to spend so much money just to pay our bills, and that forces us to work hard just to pay our bills. And, like, that's not where I'm at in life, and that's not where I want to be. So we live, you know, in a fairly modest house in the burbs, and I love our house, and we're never leaving it because our mortgage payment is tiny, and it's amazing. And if I can keep my fixed expenses fairly low and really prioritize spending money on flexible expenses that are important to me and important to our family, then it makes me feel better about working and earning money because you know that you're doing it for things that are actually important to you. And so that's huge. I think we talk about that a little bit in our family too. Like, we just don't want to make money for the sake of making money and spending more money in a way that doesn't actually bring us joy.
Yeah, spend on what brings you joy and avoid the stuff that doesn't. And for most people, not all, but for most people, the things that bring them joy are doing things, you know, experiences, activities with people they enjoy being around and doing it on their own terms. Yeah, material things can bring you a brief bit of joy, but for most people, that's a fleeting feeling, and, you know, you get more joy out of those activities and events.
Yep. With the next thing we're going to tackle is emergency reserves. I think that we all approach this a little bit differently, but I'm fairly conservative. I target like 6 months of having like fixed expenses, just bills and groceries covered for emergencies. But I have a hard time thinking that I could easily break it down to just the necessities if something really big happened. So I feel like that probably wouldn't last me 6 months. So like, if we had zero income, it probably wouldn't. But I also know that there are other resources that we have to tap into. You know, it's hard to raid yourself in quickly, but if there's a real, real emergency, you can break into your 401k or your 403b. Like, we don't want to do that, and hopefully we never need to do that. But you do have other ways that you can potentially, you know, cover things for a little bit. And if you have adequate insurances, you know, for like the really big things that could potentially happen, hopefully you don't need to do that ever.
Yeah, I'm with you, you know. Try and keep about 6 months of expenses in a high interest savings account. You know, right now you can get about 4.5% or more in some cases in a high interest savings. So if the cash is just sitting there, get that free money.
Absolutely. Yep.
Let's see. Cash flow planning / budgeting, which I don't like the word budget, but maybe spending planning, if you will. So, you know, luckily Lindsay and I are both, you know, pretty mindful of our spending. We kind of are cut from the same cloth there. We don't overspend. You know, we look for deals. I've personally never been a big budgeter. Nothing against people who are. I'm all for it if it works for you. But, you know, I'm just kind of naturally cheap and frugal and know my limits. You know, I don't really buy new stuff often. If it ain't broke, don't replace it is kind of the mentality. I definitely prioritize saving towards financial goals. And in my opinion, as long as you're on track to reaching the goals and objectives that are important to you, do whatever you want with what's left over. So, you know, I make sure we're saving enough for retirement, put money aside for the kids' colleges, our debts are in good order. You know, so with whatever's left over, you know, we can spend it if we want to, or save more of it, which would, you know, we kind of do a combination of the both, you know, give some money to charity. So it's, we got some flexibility there, which is nice.
Yeah. I think with cash flow planning and like budgeting, a lot of people don't need to do it. You know, like you just don't need to actually look at it and be like, oh, we need to spend less in this area and maybe like we can afford to do more over here. But I like to review spending just to see like, okay, does this make sense for us? Like, is this something that maybe we shouldn't be doing? I remember I was so mad at Nick yesterday because he went to a specific store where he likes to buy coffee and got coffee, and we were out of half and half, and he refused to buy coffee at that, or half and half at that place, because it's more expensive than where we usually buy half and half. We were out of half and half. So now we have coffee and we don't have half and half. And I was like, Nick, that $3 does not matter. And then our daughter looks at me and she goes, Mom, you don't need coffee that bad. I was just like, oh my gosh, this is a ridiculous conversation.
Wait till you're older, kid.
I know. It was so silly. And I mean, anyway, but it is nice to be mindful of spending. But in reality, for many of us, it doesn't matter if we spent $3 more on half and half than we should have. Anyway, I have used Mint to like track spending in the past, which that app is kind of going away, which sucks. But the thing I like about that is that it puts money in categories. So you can see like, okay, how much am I spending on this? How much money am I spending on this? Does that seem reasonable to me? Like, did that feel good this month? You know, does it matter that I spent that much money on that? And I like to do like an annual review of that as well, because I think some things are just longer term patterns, especially with travel and stuff like that. You know, like that's not going to be something that you're doing every month. And then you look at it and you're like, okay, so for this year, maybe we spend a little less on travel because sure, that trip was great, but it was also stressful and I don't want to do that again. And maybe we can go camping a couple times and it will just be less stressful or whatever it is. Like you can make adjustments if you look at those bigger trends. So I do find it helpful to review them.
Yeah, no, I think it's good to periodically go through your credit card and bank account transactions, make sure everything's on the up and up. It doesn't look like anything's erroneous on there. You actually did get reimbursed for that thing you returned, you know, and just have a general idea of where you're spending money. I think having awareness is beneficial, but, you know, not 100% sold on making a hard and fast budget for yourself. But if you want to do that, by all means, go for it. You know,
yeah,
you do you.
I think jumping into like specific spending things, like I am, like Corey, you talked a little bit about time being important to you. I'm all about like, we have cleaners come twice a month. And that is something I will pay for all day long. All day long. Because also, by the way, it helps with marital discord. Like I can no longer do certain things without feeling some anger. And so if I can offload that to someone else, it makes it so much easier. So there are some things that we intentionally spend more money on. Another one is honestly alcohol, which maybe I shouldn't admit. But, you know, like the wine club membership, do we need that? No. Does it bring me joy? Yes, it does. So we're going to keep doing it. And, you know, there's some things that we intentionally do choose to spend a little bit more money on because of the amount of, you know, like maybe house cleaning. House cleaning does bring me joy. I was going to say maybe it doesn't bring me joy, but it does. Like there are things that you can focus on and it's well worth it.
Oh, I'm with you. Like, yeah, I made a decision a few years ago. It's like, I'm going to buy the nice bourbon now. I'm not going to buy the cheap stuff. Like I can afford to spend, you know, the $40, $60, $100 on a bottle if I really want to. And we don't drink that much, so it lasts a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, when you break it down, it's cheaper than getting a drink out at a bar or restaurant. It's cheaper than wine, honestly.
It is. You know? No, Nick and I talked about this a lot over Christmas because I bought him a couple of nice bottles of whiskey. And then I was like comparing it to the wine in our wine club membership. And I was like, per drink, that whiskey is way less expensive than the wine.
Oh, yeah. Like a $20 bottle of wine is like a $60 bottle of whiskey. Like it's,
yeah, because there's like five glasses in a bottle of wine, maybe.
Yeah, five glasses in wine. It's like 12 to 15 in a 750-ml bottle of
breaking it down.
Yeah. Yeah. Do that math, the cost per ounce or cost per drink. That's what us financial nerds do. But yeah, spend on what brings you joy. Like, we're, you know, we hired a landscaping company in the fall to clean up all the pine needles and pine cones in our yard, which, you know, is very tedious and meticulous and annoying. It would have taken me multiple hours to do. If you like look at my actions, they don't always make sense, and I think that's goes for everyone. Like, I'll think twice about adding guac to a burrito. You know, it's like $2 more. You know, but I'll spend $100 on a bottle of whiskey.
It's like the half and half, right?
Yeah, and I try to do better about that. It's like, I know, all right, we need this thing. I know it's cheaper at that other grocery store, but is it really worth my time and energy to save $1? To get this thing at the other grocery store when it's going to, take me an extra like 30 minutes in my day to go to multiple ones. Let's just buy this. If I only need the one thing, let's just get it at this more expensive store that I'm already at, like whatever. Anyways. So yeah, factoring in the time and trying to value that time in the equation versus just the dollars spent. But yeah, I hesitate to get the more expensive food item on the menu, but, I'll buy the good seats for a comedy show or a play or sporting event or something. It's maybe once a year that I go to one of those, but still, I don't care about clothes, so I don't ever buy new clothes. But I won't hesitate to play golf at an expensive golf course. I get more joy out of that than getting a new pair of jeans. I have one pair of jeans. I've had it for probably a decade, and my daily attire is shorts and sweatpants. We don't go out very often. So the one pair of jeans suffices.
Mm-hmm. I love that the jeans are your going out pants.
Oh yeah. Well, we live in a town where formal wear is a Patagonia jacket. It's mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a high class town. People don't dress up here.
Absolutely. Which maybe brings us to debt.
Yes.
How do we debt. Not have debt? You start, yeah. Corey.
So, avoid high interest rate debt. Pay it off if you have it. We pay off our credit cards every month. The only other debt we have is a mortgage at 4.75%. We got that in 2022 before rates really took off. And we have a handful of payments left on a 0.9% interest rate car loan, which I've just been paying the minimums on it because I receive more interest from my high interest savings account than I'm paying to the car loan. So I'm making money by not paying that off faster. So that'll get paid off, by the end of the year, and then it'll just be the mortgage, and we'll probably keep it that way for a while. I only have 19,000 miles on my car. That thing will last another 20 years if I want it to. Yep. Marital arguments go back and forth about the timing of when to get new cars, but we'll, I think because Lindsay's car is coming up on 7 years old now, but same thing, it's got 50,000 miles. It's a Toyota, it's gonna last another 20 years if we want it to, but yeah, so eventually we'll probably get a new car, but not immediately,
not anytime soon. Yeah, we've got a super low interest rate mortgage that we refinanced during the pandemic. So it's 2.5%, which feels amazing. Yeah. And I think we'll live here forever. I can't see myself putting extra towards the mortgage. I don't think that will ever happen. It just won't. But I love our credit cards because we get points and cash back and all that stuff, but we pay them off every month, obviously. And then we didn't have any other debt for a long time, but in the last year and a half, we did do a car loan, and we added solar to our house, and the interest rates on those were low enough that it made sense to do it. We put a little extra down on the car because it was right around 4%, and I didn't love that, so we just put a little down on the front. But yeah, other than that, I think maybe we'll probably just pay not extra on any of those. And then we have we used a 0% loan to get a new refrigerator and stuff just because it's free, so why not? It's much easier for cash flow planning to just have a little extra every month that you don't even notice versus taking a couple grand out of your savings account. And I really like using credit where it's useful. I think that it can be a very helpful tool. That's a chunk of money that you can now do something else with, something more productive potentially. So I think that I like to use credit where it makes sense to use credit.
Yeah. I think we're on the same page there. You know, if the interest rate is low or free, use it. If not, pay cash, no plans to pay off the mortgage faster. I think I can achieve a greater long-term average rate of return on investment. So I'd rather save more and retire sooner, even if it means I'm retiring before the mortgage is paid off. But I don't know if I'll ever truly quit working. Like, I'll probably maybe scale down over time. You know, have a smaller client base one day, but
yeah.
But no hurry to pay off the lower interest rate debts.
Yeah, I think with the mortgage, I doubt we'll ever pay extra on it. I think even if we had that payment and we were fully retired, it's just not huge anyway. You know, so it's a pretty small fixed payment, and I think that, like, we could easily still pay that when we're retired. It's just not going to be an issue for cash flow ever, I don't think.
Speaking of retirement, what's your approach to retirement savings and retirement planning?
Yeah, I think I'm more like our clients in this scenario where I kind of got started late with retirement savings just because I didn't know what the heck I wanted to do with my life, you know? So I was like, ooh, should I go to law school? Nah, that doesn't seem like fun. You know, like all of these different things, and like finally settled into financial advising in my 30s. And I had saved a little bit up to that point, but not much, you know. So I think really similar to a lot of our clients. And Nick had started saving, like he had a little bit more than me, but I still felt like we were just kind of getting a late start. So we definitely prioritize long-term savings a lot. We're probably around like a 25% savings rate right now. And definitely plan to keep increasing that over time. And we do almost everything on a Roth basis that we can right now. So like 401ks, backdoor Roth. We are also like fully funding an HSA. We'll talk a little bit more about health insurance later too. But I think we'll probably be in a lower tax bracket in the future. So that's why I prioritize Roth savings. But it's also, you know, like I'm one of those people that thinks tax rates will probably be higher in the future. And I don't know that for sure, but I'd rather not worry about it. Like, I'd rather have a good chunk of money in retirement that I just don't have to worry about paying taxes on.
Yeah, I'm with you. We were probably saving closer to 25%. And then last year we bought a house, so that savings dipped a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, trying to save at least 20%. I've been, you know, pretty much doing that since my early 20s, since I started working.
So yeah,
we're at a good clip. But yeah, I like to try and increase that over time. You know, I've already said it multiple times today, but, you know, prioritize saving over spending, which sometimes can lead to marital disagreements when Lindsay wants to get new furniture for the house and I'd rather save more into retirement because our couch still works and our kids are just going to ruin whatever new furniture we get. And like a small part of me cringes every time I spend money, you know, like I want to try and get the best bang for my buck. I can afford the guac at Chipotle, but I'll often get a veggie burrito where it comes with free guac instead. And it's like, you get the best of both worlds and maybe it's tiny bit healthier for you.
It is a tiny bit healthier probably. And by the way, I didn't know that. And now I'm doing that forever.
Yeah. another hack if you want. You get just a bean and cheese burrito and mm-hmm. it's like $2.50 and then you can, and it's like a full on, just they load it up for you. They just charge it as like a side of beans or something.
There we go.
And then you can add the guac to it. So if you just want bean and cheese and guac, you can get like a $4 or $5 burrito from Chipotle. Anyways. Try to increase that savings rate for retirement every single year. Max out all the tax favorable accounts first and foremost, you know, the 401k, backdoor Roth, then do the rest to a taxable account. You know, we're kind of in a unique spot with our line of work where part of our income comes through as W-2, part of it's 1099. So, you know, I'll do the max out the employee portion of the Roth 401k on the W-2 side and then do pre-tax to a solo 401k from the 1099 earnings. So, you know, get a combination of pre-tax and Roth, which I think, you know, is beneficial. Get some tax deductions today, some tax-free money in retirement. It's, you know, win-win. But yeah, don't know if I'll ever completely retire. like the idea of being financially independent. So that's why I want to prioritize the savings. Would rather have too much money and just give some away to charity or something in retirement than not have enough. And you never know what life's going to throw at you. You know, health could prevent me from working as long as I would want to. I may need to help support kids in the future or family members, whatever. Like, you never know. So yep. Rather be over prepared than under prepared.
Always. Yeah, I think I'll probably want to get out at some point. I'm not a person that can work and not feel stress. Like, I think some people are very good at compartmentalizing. I'm not. So I think eventually I'm just going to be like, oh, I don't want to deal with the stress of work anymore. Just period. So, and I don't anticipate doing that super early. Like, that's just not, I don't know. I don't think that's in me. I think I would get very, very, very bored very quickly. But, you know, sometime in my 60s, I'm probably going to be like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Done. Yeah.
Find something else to do that's less stressful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keep yourself busy so you don't get bored.
Yeah. And maybe less obligations. Like, oh, I can do it if I want to do it. Like that kind of thing.
Yeah. I guess you could still do financial planning. Like, there's, you know, I know the CFP does like pro bono stuff where they're looking for volunteers to help.
Or like mentorship, things like that.
Mm-hmm. You can do it on your own terms.
Yeah.
Let's see. Investment strategies. What do we invest in? So I invest in the exact same stuff as my clients. Like, I'm in the identical portfolios that they're in. If you're of a similar age and career stage as me, like, we're in the same stuff. You know, there's no differences there. I do have a small portion of my money in structured notes in some of my accounts. I think we've talked about those before in a previous episode where I'll find ones that are like, that give you more than 1x upside, but they have a downside buffer. So as long as the bank that's issuing them doesn't go out of business or go bankrupt, you know, which is, if you're getting them from a JP Morgan or a, you know, Citibank, Morgan Stanley, some of the large institutions, you know, it's pretty low risk. That's something that they're not going to be able to repay their debts. But so those are kind of nice where you get downside protection if market goes down, but you get some upside. You can participate in the upside even more so than the market in some cases. The catch is your money's tied up for whatever duration you signed up for. So if you buy a 3-year note, well, it's locked in for 3 years, then you can't really touch it. So not as liquid there as a more traditional investment vehicle, but, just a medley of mutual funds and ETFs, mostly index funds, few active funds mixed in there where our investment team feels like there's opportunities. Stock trading doesn't interest me. Like, I've dabbled in it before in college and, you know, I've bought a few stocks here and there, but like too much time and energy to really, you know, I'm not going to spend the necessary time to research and thoroughly an investment to know if it's really a worthwhile opportunity. If there's a company that I like for whatever reason, or feel like it's their stock's low, I might throw a couple bucks in it, but that's few and far between. Real estate doesn't interest me either. Too many headaches, too concentrated of a risk. The primary residence is enough for me, in my opinion. So like I've always been a big fan of statistics. Like in high school, I would pull out the newspaper every morning, go to the sports section, read the box scores from all the football games or the basketball games, and, you know, go through the individual stats. And so I was really good at fantasy football in high school. I like knew all the players and who was good. But big fan of data, and the data is strongly against individual stock picking. Like, it's just not, if you use the gambling analogy, like the house wins and you are not the house, your odds are actually probably better by going to a casino. Actually not true at all. Actually, you'll still get positive returns over the long run in individual stocks. It's just, you'll probably do 50% better if you invest in just a diversified index fund or something. So it's pretty drastic that expected difference. There's really no investments out there that have consistently outperformed the stock market over the long run. You know, when you look at some of these alternative types of things, private equity, hedge funds, you name it, like none of them have consistently outperformed the long-term results of stocks. You know, maybe a surgical center where you guys as doctors can buy in at an artificially low share price and they immediately start spitting out returns and distributions that equate to like a 20% ROI on your money year over year. Like, but that doesn't exist to the normal public. So it's, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I think that's just not necessary a lot of times to take on that extra risk. Like it just, you don't need to do that in order to accomplish your financial goals, but some people do enjoy it. Yeah. Yeah, same thing. I'm in model portfolios, same as my clients. With my husband's 401k, I even have it in a target date. So, and that's partially because like the individual mutual fund options in his plan were not great. You know, like there just wasn't a good option to put together something that was better. So I was like, why would I try this and then have to maintain it? Or I could just put it in this very inexpensive index target date and worry about it later. Like if I want to rebalance out of that at some point, I can, which is nice with retirement plans. You know that what you're picking is not necessarily a forever pick. With other things that like I don't have in model portfolios because I can't, like my 401k, for example, and then also our HSA investments, I usually check on it maybe like once or twice a year and tweak it a little bit, like if the allocation seems like it's off. And that's about it. You know, I really think that a hands-off approach is better than like getting in there and messing around with it all the time. We do have like a little brokerage account for our daughter, and I do have like a couple of tiny stock picks in there, just like buy and hold things. I'm not going to mess around with it. It was just for fun more than anything else, like going to the casino and seeing what you can win for your little 8-year-old daughter. But
go to Chuck E. Cheese and play the games with the tickets.
Oh my gosh. Yes, those things are just teaching our children to gamble, I swear. Speaking of kids, I think with college funding, you get some different approaches here as well. Like we have a 529 account and we have for a long time. We do like 2 deposits per month. I don't know why. That's why I set it up though, or that's how I set it up. And then I think I'm more worried about overfunding it than some people are. Like I do think that the trends in college education are changing a little bit. Like it almost seems like maybe not everyone's going to go to college. And I think that she will. Like I don't think, but there, I don't know, there's this part of me that thinks there's a small possibility that she won't and that that's okay. But I really just wonder like what that will look like. We have a neighbor across the street with a 23-year-old daughter. I'm sure I've talked about her on this podcast before because it's my nightmare. But basically she went to 4 years of private college education. She got a degree. And now she's like, I nanny sometimes. I'm like, oh my God, like, what are you doing? Like, that's what I don't want to happen. I don't want her to go to college without any purpose, get an expensive 4-year degree, and then come out and do whatever she could have done without a 4-year degree. Like, that is a huge thing. But anyway, so we're also putting a little bit in a brokerage account just because I want her to have some money that's a little bit more flexible. And obviously, knowing that we can transfer a lot of money from a 529 to a Roth IRA for her, just based on the new rules, it gives me a little peace of mind too.
Yeah, I've been funding 529 since our kids were born. I try and increase the amount a little every year. And then my plan is once I have the equivalent of 4 years worth of in-state public school accounted for, you know, going to direct those ongoing deposits to the brokerage account that's more flexible. You know, I'm pretty confident they'll probably go to college. You know, I don't know for a fact, but, you know, trade school, maybe, who knows?
But you also have 2 kids, you know, so if one of them doesn't and the other one goes to a private school, it's all good, you know?
That could be a possibility. If neither of them go to college at all, you know, there's probably some future, like I said, trade school, apprenticeship programs, whatever, where, you know, there might be some costs associated with it that you could use the 529 for. Otherwise, like, I got a niece we could use it for. We could use it for ourselves. Like, I'd be on board with going to culinary school when I, quote unquote, retire. And,
you know, I love
not,
that.
Not to, like, go work at a restaurant, but for my own personal benefit. Like, how can I up the cooking game? Maybe go to bartending school while I'm at it, learn to make some good cocktails. Although at that point, there's a decent chance alcohol is going to be like tobacco, where it's just no one uses it because it's frowned upon.
Don't say that, Corey.
It'll be like cigarettes. The data is out there that says there's nothing good about it for you.
I know.
A few hours of happiness.
I know.
But you know, who knows? You're starting to see the non-alcoholic cocktails and spirits
so much. Out, so yeah.
Which part of that? It's like they're the same price as the real stuff. Which I'm like, all right, if I'm gonna pay this much money, like, can I at least get a little buzz going?
Yeah.
I don't know. So, Lindsay and I were talking, I was looking at Lewis Hamilton's agave spirit that's non-alcoholic, but it's $40 a bottle. I'm like, all right, if I'm going to spend $40, I'll get real tequila.
yep.
Anyways, moving along. So yeah, college savings, planning for it, trying not to oversave. Who knows? We'll see what happens because kids.
Yep.
Insurance planning. So... yes, we have it. We've got the fancy health plan through work, in part because work pays for most of it, rather than the HSA option, with young kids. Like, you know, we did that because you don't know what you're going to get when you have a kid, if they're going to have health issues or not. Rather just have it covered by the insurance. On the disability front, I try and maximize as much as I can get. You know, I'll bump it up every year or two as income rises. If it rises enough to warrant an increase, I'll look at bumping that up. And the disability, you know, again, we practice what we preach. If I can't work, that's probably the biggest problem in our life because we got a mortgage, we got kids, we got expenses, you know, we need income to pay that stuff. So I want to make sure the income's replaced if I can't earn an income. Life insurance, I've got enough term insurance that if I die tomorrow, I'll pay off the mortgage, set money aside for the kids, and probably set Lindsay up for the rest of her life. She has a good financial planner. So
in your absence.
Yeah, there's a few that she could get in touch with here that would that she knows that would do a good job for her at probably a reasonable cost. Mm-hmm. Assuming she doesn't remarry. But I might convert some of that term to an index life policy at some point just to have a little bit of permanent coverage and, you know, an option for some tax deferred accumulation to be determined on that one at this juncture. I do have IULs on both kids, though, that I'm max funding so that, you know, when they're adults, they'll have a little bit of life insurance in case they can't get approved for whatever reason, or, you know, they'll have some cash value in there too that they could either cash out, or they could just let it pay for itself for the long run. They could, you know, borrow against it. You know, they'll have some options with that. And then on the home and auto side of things, you know, maximize the liability coverage on all of it. Like, get the max liability on the home and the auto policies. Like, I think I have $1 million of personal liability there. I've maximized my uninsured motorist liability coverage to $1 million. So if I'm hit by someone without insurance, I'll at least be covered up to $1 million. And then I believe I have $3 million of umbrella coverage. Might bump that up to $5 million soon just because I've heard some horror stories of, you know, people with car accidents. And it's, you know, umbrella is pretty cheap. Like, you can get a large amount of coverage for a pretty low cost. So it's just that, God forbid I'm at fault in a car accident and I get sued, want the insurance to cover the full cost of that scenario rather than them having to go after me personally. And that could create some headaches and expenses that I don't necessarily want to deal with.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's kind of the nightmare scenario. The bad car accident. We have the high deductible health plan, partially because Nick's work puts a good chunk of money into the HSA for us and kind of covers a lot of maybe out of pocket expenses we might have through the year, but we don't touch it. We actually leave the money in the HSA. We actually just started kind of saving receipts and things like that, because I mean, we could potentially tap into that account later, but it was partially because it just was building faster than I thought it was going to. And I was like, I kind of assumed that we would be able to use all of that money for healthcare expenses when we're retired. But I was like, oh gosh, if we keep doing this for the next 20 years, like maybe not, like this might be too much money. And I'd rather have receipts to go back to than have to take out that money pre-tax. Yeah. So that's where we're at with health insurance. I like it a lot. I should probably pay a little more attention because we do have some out-of-pocket costs for, like, Colette has allergy treatments and things like that, but it doesn't seem like anything too crazy. And with disability insurance, I have both an individual policy and a group policy, which is helpful. And then for Nick, I just had him do, like, the buy-up option at work, which was – it was adequate to, like, cover his income, which was great. So his work actually has some great benefits, which has been really helpful. And then we both have term life insurance policies. Nothing too crazy. I had thought about doing the IUL thing as well, Corey. And then I feel like I'm just kind of over it. I just feel like it's one of those things that is maybe more complicated than it needs to be. And I would just rather keep things simple and just not mess around with more complicated things, which is maybe a poor reason to make that choice. But it's one of those things I feel like we don't need it, so why do it? And just move on. We definitely have like maximum liability limits on all the things on home and auto insurance with an umbrella policy as well. But I think ours is just 1 million right now, which we should probably look at and revisit, honestly. And another thing we should revisit. So kind of one of the last things on our list is estate planning, which immediately makes me feel guilty. We did do it. It is set up. We do have a will. But it was a few years ago. I feel like I didn't know what I was doing at the time. We created a trust, but we never funded it. Like, in order for anything to be in a trust, you have to retitle things and change beneficiaries and all this stuff. So we just have this basically fake trust that won't do anything if either of us passes away. And part of it was because I wasn't confident that the attorney set it up correctly. And so I just didn't want it to be wrong, right? Because that feels like it would have some pretty massive implications. So this year, we did sign up for legal insurance through my husband's work, through Nick's work, to give me a little extra incentive to revisit it because I think, you know, it's going to be important. Also, one thing that I think about a lot, Corey, is like, where do we put all this important stuff so our, like, partners know where to find it? Because I feel like Nick would be in trouble because I'm the keeper of the knowledge, but I don't know.
Yeah, we have one of those little fireproof safes in the closet that we've got our legal docs in. The issue is if one of us forgets the password or
yes,
we both pass away.
Yes, that's what I was just thinking. Yes.
I think I've emailed the password to my family at one point in time. The odds of them having that email may be
exactly
able to find
it. Like, this is the thing that keeps me up at night.
There's got to be a way, though, to like drill through that keypad and open it somehow.
Totally. It's not like it. Yeah.
I don't know how, though. And like, they know the attorney who set it up. Like, I've given them that. So, like, the attorney's office should have a copy too, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's the communication of where stuff is, who to get in contact with. Like, it's important to have one of those, you call it a death note. It's like, in case I die, here's where all the things are. Here's the passwords. Here's
I need that.
Who to go to. You have to update that periodically.
Just like put it on your refrigerator. Just
yeah, maybe not on the fridge because like if someone breaks into your house, it's like, all right, here's the keys to your life. But yeah, put it in the safe or put it like in the crawl space or some hidden, you know, behind a picture. I don't know.
Where an important person knows where to find it.
Exactly. You know? But yeah, I need to revisit that one because it's been a few years since I last printed the if I die note. But yeah, same thing, estate plan. Like, we set up an estate plan about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now,
yeah,
after our oldest was born, probably should revisit it. All we did was a basic living will with a testamentary trust that everything would go into if both of us die for the benefit of the kids. Might want to update that to a living trust, but same thing. The idea of like retitling everything seems like a pain in the butt. So We're as bad as our clients on this front.
I always, whenever I talk to my clients about this, I'm like, this is important. It's also hard. Like, but it is important, but it's hard. It's like this double-sided thing for sure.
Yeah, that's probably one of the like recurring items on the Absolutely. Reminder list for clients. I'm like, hey, friendly reminder for the umpteenth time to get this done. And I'm with you. At least we did it the first time, so we got something there, but yeah, might absolutely. Need to update it. It's due for an update. Wrapping up here with the fun world of taxes. Not a fan of taxes. I took a couple accounting classes in college and was like, that's enough for me. So I have an accountant do my taxes. I'm pretty organized with everything. So, I keep things nice and organized for my accountant to easily be able to go through everything. I'm not just like sending him a box of loose receipts and saying, figure it out. It's, here's the deductible expenses for the year and the different categories they're in. Here's all my tax forms from the various entities. Here's like the summary of what we did, how much we saved into these accounts. So it's as straightforward as possible for the accounting people to do the accounting things that they do. And then they just tell me, here's what you owe. Here's how much more you can add to that solo 401k. Here's what your quarterly estimates are for the year. And I pay the quarterly estimated taxes. I just set them up on auto pay on the websites for the IRS and the state. And then usually touch base in the fall. I'll be like, hey, here's where things are so far this year. Here's where my income's looking like it's going to end up. Here's what I've paid already in taxes. Should I, pay more for that final estimate? Should I not pay it? Like this year, state of Oregon's given everyone a refund on their state taxes because they collected too much tax revenue, and there's some goofy legislation in their, I don't know.
It's in the Oregon Constitution. Yeah.
It's like, hey, if we collect more than we budgeted for, we're going to give some back to everyone. I'm like, hey, you've got like a lot of other issues you could use this money for. Like, how about we shore up PERS or, pay school teachers that are on strike or like, fix the homeless issues. But whatever. I guess I won't say no to getting some money back.
Right. Because that is an option. You can say, please keep my money. But no one does that.
Well, yeah, it's like, oh, you could donate it to the state. And I'm like, well, I want to know how it's going to be used. I don't want to just pay some crooked politicians to, anyways, I'll take it back and I'll donate it myself if I want to some cause. But I ended up not paying my final quarterly estimate for the state because the refund I'm going to get is probably larger than the last quarter's estimate for the state. So like, why pay extra money just to get more back in April? Yeah. Touch based. I do like a mid-year or three-quarters year touch base with the accountant just to make sure we're on the right track and there's not going to be any surprises come April.
Yep. I'm still doing it myself and I probably shouldn't be, but I am. Well, I do feel like I'm pretty organized. I have everything in the folders. I save everything as I go so that it's very much all in one place when it's time to file taxes. But it's also like such a hodgepodge. Like, so I have like a portion of my income is 1099 income, like Corey just talked about. And how I've dealt with that so far is just make Nick take a bunch of extra money out of his W-2 paycheck and pay ahead on taxes so that I don't even have to do quarterly estimates. But it's not going to work forever. It's very much like this like Band-Aid situation right now. So I have actually reached out to an accountant to help with taxes next year and like help with 2024 planning. But I basically was like, I know you're busy right now. I get it if you don't respond to my email for 3 months. And I haven't heard back from him, which is what I expected. but I think 2024 is the year. I think I'm done. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, I got to run. But yeah, to wrap things up, we practice what we preach. For those of you who are our clients, we're pretty much doing the exact same stuff we tell you guys to do. Or should be doing. And yeah.
Yep.
So we're in this boat together.
If you ever have questions, you can ask us. Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you.
That's what we're here for. Have a good one.
We would love to hear your feedback and suggestions for future topics you'd like us to cover. You can get in touch with the show by emailing podcast@thefinitygroup.com or by following Finity Group on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Finity Group LLC.
You can follow me on Twitter at Corey Janoff CFP, Instagram at Corey Janoff, or on LinkedIn under my name, Corey Janoff.
You can follow me on Twitter at Rochelle Finance, or on Instagram, Vanderzanden Rochelle, or on LinkedIn under my name, Rochelle Vanderzanden.
Check out all of the podcast episodes on thefinitygroup.com/podcast, on our Finity Group YouTube channel, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to check out our Financial Clarity blog at thefinitygroup.com/blog.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Financial Clarity for Doctors by Finity Group, LLC.